So those of you that didn't read very well the summary or the outline of this weekend in the site of Tovana, and imagine this is going to be a nice restful weekend, learn a bit of meditation, walk under the trees, and especially right now, going to get a bit of a shock. The Buddha said that life has no protector. There is no one to protect us in this life. There is no real place of safety. There is nothing that's permanent. Everything has to be left behind. One of the most common sentences in the Buddhist Eastern world are the five remembrances, which are said every time there is a burial. In the monasteries, are often said every single day. So it's constantly these are being spoken and said in different languages. So I'd like to read them. It's called Meditation on the Five Remembrances. And if you like, you can sort of feel them. I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. I am of the nature to get sick. There is no way to escape getting sick. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. The only thing that I inherit, I receive, are the results of my actions in body, speech, and mind. My actions are the ground on which I stand. These sentences and the Buddhist teaching invites us to wake up to reality. Reality of our vulnerability, our fragility, shavirut, which is fundamental. And we need to wake up from it because otherwise we spend our whole life trying to stop it. We spend our whole life trying to prevent the unpreventable. We spend our whole life trying to be safe and comfortable, to defend ourselves against change and against the unexpected and the unknown. We spend our whole life building castles and then imprison ourselves inside these castles of our comfort zone. And we spend our whole life trying to control the uncontrollable life. And it's fair enough if the body is doing it. So none of us would want to cut ourselves with a knife or walk under a bus or take some poison. But the body is not busy protecting itself. The mind and the self takes on the job. And the mind and the self does it 24 hours. Because the mind is busy trying to protect the body and itself. The self is busy trying to protect itself constantly from any imagined problem or threat. For example, disturbance. Here, even here, we find disturbance. The body is disturbed. No. Doing walking meditation, the mind gets disturbed. Why don't the muezzin shut up? Someone says something to us which is hard or difficult, insulting, and we want to kill that person. The body was hurt? No. The self was hurt. The self is constantly looking for where I might be hurt. But the body doesn't do that. Body just like an animal that's just doing its thing. You can see attachment to views, how the self takes on a view. And then such a lot of suffering is created from a view. A view such as they are our enemies. And they always will be and always are our enemies. And all we need to do is have protection, defending armies, and so on. It's a view. Everyone's sharing it. Every country is busy with these views. Who are the enemies today? For example. And wars come from that. Desires, needs, what's missing, what I don't have, what I'm agiyali, what ought to be. All of that is a self busy trying to prevent vulnerability. And because it uses up all our life, it's really important to see it and let it go. All of that busyness called protection. Equanimity is, as I say, our ability to surf the glosh on the waves of change. Not to let them knock us down and knock us over, but to glide on the waves of change. Our ability to say, yes, change is happening. I recognize all these places of vulnerability, pigiut, in me, but I can ride the waves of change. And it's really important. It's based on non-attachment to the way things should be. Attachment is always the way things should be for me, the way I want things to be. Non-attachment is I'm not attached to the way things should be. I am not in the control business. Let life be uncontrollable. We can renounce vitur, we can renounce the need, the pressure to control life. We can just renounce it, we can just let it go. Be free of the pressure to control life. Again, it doesn't mean to say that if we're sick, we don't go to a doctor. The Buddha had a doctor called Jivaka. It's fine. The Buddha needed to go to a doctor, he went to a doctor. You need, I need, it's fine. It's not about passivity. It's about the dachaf, the pressure to keep on controlling life, which is using up our whole life and being busy with it. It's very funny, we have this legend in English history I learned in my school about a king who was an Anglo-Saxon king called Canute. And one day he got up and took all his court to the sea and said, I am going to control the tides. A tide? You know the tide? Geut. And he stood there with all his court and he tried to stop the tides, and of course nothing happened. But so they probably chopped off his head. But it's in English history, it's always the image, myth of someone who has the illusion of trying to control the uncontrollable. And it gets more subtle when, for example, we have a theory called, I must get my life in balance. And I'm sure there's every one of us here in this room says it at least once a week. Oh, my life is out of balance. I'm working too much. I'm working too little. I need to get more money. I need to get more of this. I need to have more relationships. I need to have less relationships. My life is not balanced. I live in the wrong place. I need to go to Klil. I don't like to be in Tel Aviv. And we are busy trying to make balance. And it's a language that we're all okay with. I mean, no one says they have a problem with that language. But if you look at it, it's the same. We are trying. Life doesn't bring us balance. Life doesn't bring us, like in the morning with a servant coming with a plate with the breakfast, orange juice, toast, and balance. Life doesn't supply us with balance. Life is out of balance, uncontrollable. And we need to be with that and not be a victim of it. I remember we had some difficult conversations in the work we did bringing Israelis and Palestinians together over many years. We brought groups of Israelis and Palestinians for weekends of deep dialogue in Nablus. And one of the things that came up again and again was the Palestinians would say, look, we really appreciate your coming to us to make peace, but you don't appreciate our suffering. This situation is not symmetrical. You come from the coffee houses of Tel Aviv. We come from a place where every family has at least one person in prison, one person in a wheelchair, one person killed, the kids are traumatized, our whole society is destroyed. So there's no symmetry in this at all. Asymmetria. Completely. So the only thing we could answer is, life, this is part of the suffering. Non-symmetry, asymmetry, we didn't create it. It is creating, it is one of life's non-balance. And all we can do is be compassionate and hope it changes and be with you in this. And anyway, the asymmetry can switch very fast from back. So, equanimity is not being knocked over by the waves, the tsunamis of life. Is not being under pressure to control life. Is staying steady in the middle of life. Staying steady in the middle of asymmetry, of non-balance, of non-controlled, of birth, aging, and death, like in the, stay steady in the middle of that. Stay steady in the middle of our difficult thoughts that seem to keep on going round and round as we sit here. Stay steady in the middle of the heart that tells us, we're a mess, or somebody else is a mess. Stay steady in the middle of our experience. Stay steady in the middle of whatever turns up. That's the quality of equanimity. It feels like the sentences that Ron gave you today may give you a feeling of this. And that's really why we use them. Like a feeling, okay, and this. I'm ready also for that. And that. Okay, and that. It's that feeling of inner experience of readiness for whatever life throws at us. instead of the struggle all our life to stop it, or to change it, or to resist it. May I not be disturbed by the coming and going of events. It's really powerful. I am here. Everything is coming and going. Everything. My body is coming and going. The world is coming and going. Everything. May I stay in the center and not be disturbed by things that come and go. It's very powerful, very freeing, very deeply freeing. Allowing things to be what they are. Feeling like a rock in the stream, or a mountain, as Ron was saying, with the weather changing all the time, but the mountain is still there. And we develop slowly, slowly this quality in our practice. I must say I have a little bit of a problem with the images of the rock and the mountain, however. It's just to let you know that there is something in the nature of equanimity, in the depth of it, which is much more like being transparent, shakuf, and not a mountain. A mountain is a good image, take it with you, but the even deeper image or better image is being transparent. Life passes through us, and we are not destroyed. Not that the rain comes and I'm sitting steady like a rock, but the rain's in me, and I'm not destroyed. Things passing through us and don't stick, and don't make changes, papancha, stories, victim mind, narratives, issues, problems, fights, friction, resistances, things pass through and just pass through. So what is equanimity not like? What is it not? One thing that we might think equanimity is a form of switching off, even of being calm. So I want to be calm in the middle of change. That's not exactly equanimity. Calming down is in a way closing down. It's in a way quietening down. It's great, it's needed, it's fine, but it's not the same as equanimity. Equanimity comes from an emptiness, which the life passes through us. We don't need to be calming down. If we carry calming further and further, we get to anesthesia, haradama. We get to switching off totally. That's the direction if we take it too far. Calming is fine. It's really helpful. But it's not exactly equanimity. So we have to just be aware of the difference. Another difference is equanimity is not blocking anything. Hakhasha or hadchaka. It's not adishut, indifference. You may think, well, equanimity is, I know what it is, it's having a skin like an elephant or shell peel. It's actually much more like having no skin at all and not be destroyed, because you're so open to life. Life is passing through all the time. You and life are together. Life and you are not different. You're not trying to stop life in any way. That's a different, it's not, adishut, it's not indifference. Indifference is a kind of negative quality where we're hiding from change, or we shut down. There's a famous line from T.S. Eliot that says, non-attachment or equanimity is as the, seems like indifference, as you should, And they seem to grow in the same Gader Chai, but they're as different from each other as life is from death. This is a nice line. So equanimity is based on closeness, on intimacy, kirva, on being with life, not being separated, not being behind a wall, not being indifferent, adish. Reminds me of the story from Chelm, where the Chelmaim wanted to, they got very cold one winter, and they decided they wanted to stop the cold. So they all went together out around the city and built a wall around the city, because they thought, if we build a wall, it will keep out the cold. Equanimity is an internal protection. It's invisible. It's not a wall. And it's based on emptiness. And the best example of it is the Zen story of the empty boat, which you may know already. A passenger came to a boatman and said, "Take me across the river." And the boatman said, "Okay." And they started to row across the river. In the middle, a boat came full of people and knocked them. The boatman started to shout, "You idiots, why you do that? Well, look where you're going. You don't know how to run a boat." So they somehow managed to keep going, and they carried on. And then another boat came and knocked them. And then this time there was nothing, no one in the boat. The boatman said nothing. He didn't shout. The passenger said, "Well, why don't you shout?" So the boatman said, "There's nobody to shout at. No point in shouting, there's no one there to shout at." If we are empty, there's nobody there to shout at. Life can't shout at us. Life can't do anything with us. The emptiness is the best protection, the inside protection. We don't need the skin of an elephant or a shell peel. We need emptiness. In a way, there's no skin, but also there's no center. Things can get in because we don't have an elephant skin, but there's no center which holds on either. Things just pass through us. So I want to talk a little bit about how we train in equanimity, what's the way in which we develop equanimity in our life. Some of that is very classic mindfulness, vipassana, meditation practice. Allowing things to be what they are is the first instructions people get when they go on a course of mindfulness, the beginning. Don't resist. Watch what comes up. Allow things to be what they are. And this sense of not preference, not making adifuyot, preferences, not selecting what we want to experience, not saying censorship, censura, "I'm not this, I'll have that, I won't have that, I'll need that, I don't need that." If we kind of drop out of there, that's a training in renouncing control, in letting go of control, and being in the middle of experience. Don't forget, we're not talking about blocking anything. We're talking about being in the middle of experience. Like the Buddha had the long ears in many statues, and the image of the Buddha is that his long ears was, because he was empty inside, he could listen to all the suffering in the world without being destroyed. His equanimity is represented by big ears that can hear all the suffering in the world and not be destroyed by it. So a meditation can be about no control, about allowing things to be what they are and letting them be in a big space of awareness, letting things just dissolve into the space of awareness. There's a very nice sutta about this, which says, develop meditation that is like the earth. For then, likable and unlikable contacts with the world through the senses will not invade the mind. Just as people throw clean and dirty things, they throw shit and urine and spit and blood on the earth, and the earth is not horrified or disgusted, just absorbs it all. So our meditation can be like that. And then it goes into develop meditation that is like the water, for then contacts which we like or we don't like with the world through the senses don't invade the mind. People throw clean and dirty things into the water, and the water is not horrified or disturbed. And same with fire, and same with air. In other words, the elements, our meditation can be like the elements that is able to absorb everything and not be knocked over. The training in equanimity, what's pretty important is the three characteristics, dukkha, anicca, anatta. Those of you who've been a while in the Dharma know what they are. And dukkha is our vulnerability, the discomfort of life, the difficulty, the pains, and the problems, the dissatisfaction, isipuk, which is simply part of our life experience. It's not life, it's the way we receive life. We receive life through a filter of often of it's not good enough, or it's not perfect. And that's dukkha. That needs to be experienced not as a problem, but as part of our experience, whatever it is that we're doing. It's like a teacher for us. And we don't need to take it personally either. It's not that I am the one that life is specially picking out to be a victim, and it's, everything would be fine if life would just do it to somebody else. It's not personal, dukkha. It's part of samsara. We are born into a body. Nobody asked us. We didn't give our permission to be born. We arrived in a body. And then we suffer. Things are not perfect. We have tzitzi for a while. After 2 hours, we're hungry again. We need tzitzi again. Before the tzitzi comes, we cry, dukkha. When the tzitzi is ripe, we've got milk, we're okay for 1 hour, and then again. This is dukkha. This is samsara. This is our dependence. This is our needs. This is our sense of tlut, of dependence. This is our vulnerability. And it's okay. It's something beyond us. It's not personal. If we really get familiar with dukkha, it's one of the trainings for equanimity. Another training is anicca, which is about the fact that everything arises and goes. Nothing stays. There is an experience. If we look at it, it's passing through us. It never stops. It always changes. Even if we think it's such a difficult narrative, tough need that is bugging me my whole life, it's actually not. If you look at it carefully, it comes and goes like everything else. And anicca tells us about conditions. That everything arises because of conditions. This condition, we're in a retreat, and we have certain experiences. We go out to Rehov Dizengoff, we have other experiences. Is it the fault of life? We just get used to conditions. We know that we are sensitive to conditions. Conditions change, and our experiences change. That's anicca. When we get close to anicca, we get close to the uncontrollable nature of life, and we're okay with it. Everything is passing through us in a stream. But probably the most important training for equanimity is anatta, the third, the emptiness, the non-self. And it allows us to dance freely in the middle of the unexpected, the change, the flow of things that are pleasant or unpleasant. The emptiness means they don't stick. They don't come inside us and stick there and do things. They don't land, linchot. So we're with life. It's not adishut. We're not against life. We're not paralyzed and say, in the name of equanimity, I won't go out today. In the name of equanimity, I'll let the kittens cry. In the name of equanimity, I won't help this small child or this person crossing the road. It's not that. But it's being empty so that things don't stick and they don't work in us and they don't create resistance and issues. They don't land. And it goes with a very big view. And it's something which I like to just mention. Because maybe you can kind of get a sense that every time that you let go of something unnecessary, or something that bugs us, or something that sticks in us, like a thought, or a feeling, or a problem, or an issue, or a choice, every time we let it go, we see it as being dukkha anicca, and we feel empty. This emptiness opens a bigger space. When we're not in control of forms, space happens by itself. It opens space. When a thought disappears and vanishes into consciousness, we're left with space. And space gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So there is a sense of the bigness of space which comes naturally when we experience more and more not being in control, me the center. And this space is very natural. It's not something we need to grasp and hold on to, and I want to live in space, and I want to be a spaceship. It's very natural. We just don't get locked in to issues and suffering. And from this space, things arise and pass by, and we're fine. And we're not knocked over. We cannot be knocked over because there's so much space. How do you knock over space? How can you do it? How can you, how can you do it? You cannot do it. So that's sort of key to equanimity. And it's why equanimity is very high level. I'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow. But it's quite a high level of development in the Dharma. So I just want to finish with a few words from Krishnamurti, who writes about fear. And he says, how do we deal with fear? And he says, he takes example of a tree. And he gives the sense of the bigness of this experience called a tree. Do you take in the whole tree, or do you merely look at the branch and the leaves and the flower? Do you see the whole tree inside you? After all, a tree is the root, the branch, the flower, the fruit, the juice, the whole of the tree. Can you grasp the feeling, the significance, the beauty of the whole tree, and then look at the branch? Such a way of looking has tremendous significance. When you look at a tree next time, see the shape of it, the symmetry of it, the depth, the feeling, the beauty, the quality of the whole thing. Feeling the whole. And in the same way you have a body, you have feelings, emotions, There is the mind. There are memories, conscious, unconscious, the centuries of accumulated impressions, the name of you and your family. Can you feel the whole of that? If you do not feel the whole of that, but merely cut pieces, cut your emotions, look at pieces, it's not developed. Can you feel within yourself this whole thing? And with that feeling of the whole, then look at fear. Fear is a huge problem. Can you approach it with the immensity to meet an immensity? Immensity is, how to translate it, Mashu Ein Sofi. Can you approach it with a Mabat Ein Sofi to meet Ha Ein Sofiyut Shel Pachad? Pachad Ze Mashu Anak. Can we approach it with a Mabat, with a view that's also Anak? And I think it's important to, it's the way he describes looking at something, a tree. If we can look at the whole tree holistically, totally, with space, if we can look at our body-mind with space, totally, we don't need to struggle against this and that and this we can't control and this problem and that problem and the other problem. We just, our view is spacious, is total. And there is a sense that we can't be knocked over with this big view. Thank you.